And thanks for setting this up. So yeah, I'm very happy to talk about this in front of Condensed Matter people, because I'm a quantum information postdoc here, and I've been trying to think about Condensed Matter a bit more lately. I'm keen to hear people's thoughts about this. Also, because I guess, well, this business of quantum scars, I guess, is quite an active topic of research nowadays, and hopefully I can convince you that it's interesting. And also, so we use a couple of techniques that I don't think are, or tricks even, that I don't think they're very complicated, but they may be useful for other things. So I'm also keen to just showcase this, and maybe you can find other applications for this. So I'm going to talk about this paper, which came out last week, and it's in collaboration with Henrik from ETH. And yeah, basically about systems that, well, they do things like this. It's scar stuff. So let's just start with some setting. So basically, I'm going to be talking about non-equilibrium dynamics of pure states. No, so you have some many-body Hamiltonian, and you prepare some pure state, this psi thing, and then it evolves in time. No, and then you want to see what happens. No? This is stuff that people can do in the lab nowadays. No. So for instance, one problem you can look at is you look at a local observable, and then you look at how this local observable evolves in time. No, and in generic situations, this is what's going to happen. No, so you're going to have some sort of initial value, and then it's going to decay very quickly to some sort of thermal value, and there's fluctuations around this thermal value. But these fluctuations, as you can see, are suppressed with system size. No, so somehow this is like some sort of generic behavior of, you know, this kind of quantity and also others. No, for instance, the fidelity of the initial state with the time evolved state also does something like this. And this happens in generic situations. And these generic situations, I guess you can think of them as systems that obey the ETH, the eigenstate thermalization hypothesis, for like local observables, for instance, and when the initial state is simple. So for instance, some products, so when this state is like a product state or like an MPS with low entanglement and things like this. So this is, yes, again, this is somehow like a generic situation. No? If you have like some Hamiltonian without symmetries and things like this, you're going to see this kind of behavior. And one feature as well of these systems is that the recurrence time is extremely large. It's exponential in system size. No? So of course, you know, this curve is going to come back again to one, but this is going to take a super long time. No? So I guess you can go all the way to, you know, wherever, and then it will go back. No? And there are systems for which this doesn't happen. So one of them is integrable. Another one is many-body localized systems or Anderson localized systems. I'm not going to talk about this at all, but I just want to mention them. The one I'm going to talk about is this system with scars. And I'll explain later what these things are. And, you know, maybe there's some other stuff. I don't know. So basically, what I'm going to be talking about are systems that deviate from this behavior. And I guess to explain this initially, I want to show you a classical system that doesn't have this behavior. So this is the song of Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas Is You. These are the views in YouTube. So you can see, you know, there's like a time of a year, you know, which I guess we're approaching now. So we're probably like somewhere here, no? where, you know, basically there's like some spike, no? It's what I call a revival. No? And yeah, so this is a revival that you actually expect. No? So basically there's quantum systems that do the same thing. I guess YouTube is increasing, no? Yeah. It's too bad that I mean I think the, you know, I could only find this chart probably now it's like higher up, no? Yeah. Anyway. yeah. So this was, I guess this is expected that this happens, but there's other revivals that are more unexpected. And in particular there's this paper, which is I guess quite an important paper in the field of quantum simulation. It's quite recent, it's from a couple of years ago, as you can see, by the group at Harvard. And basically what they have is that they have this kind of quite nice setting where they can put like a bunch of atoms in a line, this Rydberg, I guess, Rydberg atoms. And they, you know, they prepare it in a pure state, which is product. And they see something that I guess, I don't know if they expected it or not, but I guess it's kind of surprising, which is that there's this local observable, which is the domain wall density. And what they see is that when they start in this initial state, which it's like, so basically this graph actually is kind of the same as this, is the time evolution. So this is like the preparation of the initial state, this part. So you have this initial state, which is sort of like, you know, this kind of thing. The observable has this sort of shape, right? And then as it evolves in time, you can see that there's a pattern that that happens sort of periodically, no? That basically this, you first have this, then you have this, and then you sort of come back to a similar configuration, no? Of the domain wall density. And then you can see it well in this graph, no? Basically, the point is that this graph looks quite different to this. And this is sort of unexpected, no? And basically, this highlights that this system does not fit into this, no? It fits somewhere here, no? Okay. So, yes, yeah, so I guess, of course, there was a lot of excitement after this experiment. I mean, I think it's a really nice one. So people, you know, started to work hard on, you know, explaining why this happens, no? And I guess they came up with this thing of scars, no? Scar states. So basically, I guess, I think what I'm gonna talk about, probably the first idea was here in this Nature Physics paper. Basically, what they realized is that the Hamiltonian of this setting is effectively this thing. This is called this PXP model. Maybe some of you have heard of this. Of course, PXP. It's one of these, like, I think they call it kinetically constrained models. I'm not entirely sure what this means, but it's one of them. So if you look at the spectrum of this Hamiltonian, you see funny things, no? In particular, you see that there are a number of really funny eigenstates in the spectrum, and these are what they call the scars. And I think this is you can see quite well in this graph here. And I want to spend some time here, actually. So I was seeing initially that generic Hamiltonians obey the ETH, no? And basically, in this graph in particular, so this graph is basically the entanglement entropy of the eigenstate, and this is the energy of the eigenstate. No? So you can see, of course, that most eigenstates are sort of here around the middle of the spectrum, of course. And basically, you can see this curve, no? That most of the eigenstates follow. So this is the curve of entanglement that you expect from the ETH, right? This is like a volume law entanglement for those of you who know about ETH a bit more, right? So this is what you expect, no? And usually systems that obey the ETH, all of these points will be sort of somewhere around here, no? But of course you can see something funny going on here, no? It's like this line, no? There's some numbers here. So these are basically anomalous eigenstates, no? These are the scar eigenstates that have very low entanglement entropy. And in particular, it's so low that, you know, it sort of violates the eigenstate thermalization, no? And they're kind of anomalous, no? So what happens in this experiment is that it happens that the product state that they started with, this is not shown here, but they start with a product state with some C2 symmetry. I guess it has to do with this sort of thing, the C2 symmetry. So this is a product state that happens to have very high overlap with these states. No? And in particular, this is the chart that shows the overlap of this initial state with the eigenstates. No? So this is it. So you can see that this is a log plot. No? You can see that there's this line of eigenstates here. Basically, this is the same line as this, right? So what's happening is that your initial state has like a very high overlap with these eigenstates with very low entropy. Yeah.
Just from this video, how do I see the sharp difference between the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 and the
this and this? Uh-huh. I guess you cannot see very well here, but I will expect the fact that this is close to this is a finite size effect, possibly.
But did they carry out any finite size analysis?
Well,
they did the finite size scaling, and you can clearly see that those states look
soft,
more like
non-logical. Yeah. Logarithmic. Yeah. So these have volume law, and I guess these two with some. Yeah, these have a logarithmic entanglement. I'll talk about this later. And I guess also these maybe like with, I don't know if this is the case, but maybe with increasing system size, these are like higher up than all of these. No, I don't know. In any case, it's clear that, you know, these states do not obey the ETH, and this is what they call a weak ergodicity breaking. No, it's weak because it's only a few eigenstates. No, so in particular, if you start in a different initial state, it will probably have overlap with states around here. So then it will thermalize. No, so this is kind of like a fine-tuned property in this sense. No, you have to start with a particular state.
So what is S here?
What's that? Sorry.
What's
S is the von Neumann entanglement entropy
for a cut
in I think it's half. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, half. Right. Okay. So I guess that's it for this slide. Okay. So basically, this is kind of an exciting thing because it's kind of new. This sort of behavior, I think. well, I don't know how new, but you know, basically from this paper and this paper, there's been a lot of excitement on this field. And you can see it from the number of papers. No? So this is a few of them. basically, all these papers have been trying to find similar models with this sort of structure as well. So there's many of them, as you can see. No? I mean, it seems that, I don't know how people do it, but condensed matter people seem very good at finding models. No? I'm really amazed by this, actually. So there's more and more. Anyway, and I think this is not all of them, actually. As you can see, many of them are actually very, most of them are very recent. No? I mean, there should be some dates. No? Basically, all of these papers are within the last 2 years. No? So you can see a lot of interest in this. And actually, when we were writing the paper, we had to like update the references like every week, basically, because there was like new stuff coming up. And in particular, I want to highlight a few of these papers, which are, I guess, a bit peculiar in a sense. So these are some later ones, some later models. I guess this four, maybe there's others, I'm not sure. But basically, what happens in these other models, they're somehow, I mean, I guess they have some similarities with the PXP model in particular. I think this is PXP with some deformation. So what they find is that actually these revivals that you saw here, they're kind of, you know, they kind of die out, no, at some point. No, they're not perfect. But there's actually some models with some initial states where you actually get perfect revivals of a state. No? So what does this mean? So it means that, you know, if you look at the overlap of an initial state with a time evolved state, you get really a periodic function, no? Perfectly periodic function. In particular, for instance, in these two papers, they find this thing. This is like an exact calculation that they can do. I think it's quite interesting that you can calculate it like this. And you know, this is just a cosine, no? So you know, you can see that really, this really behaves like the Maria Carey song, no? And also, what these papers find is that when you have this kind of thing, you get that the eigenstates on which this initial state has support, they behave like this. So they have logarithmic scaling of the von Neumann entropy. No? So I guess what this means is that probably these eigenstates have a similar kind of scaling, no? Basically logarithmic with the size of the region. So this is like, you know, this is different from an error law and a volume law. No, this is something else. It's very low entanglement. No? I mean, in particular, I think in 2D it's less entanglement than an area law. In 1D, it's more entanglement than an area law. No? Anyway.
These are for 1D models?
No. So, for instance, in particular, I know that this one, the second one, is for any dimension. Any dimension. And this doesn't depend on dimension. What, sorry? I cannot hear, sir.
Are they fine-tuned?
Oh, probably yes. I'm not sure how much. I mean, maybe you can comment on this.
Yeah, the parameter point, so I guess.
And you know, the initial state is also carefully chosen so that it has this overlap with this with all these states, no? So yeah, I guess the way these things come out is because there's some sort of like hidden symmetry in your Hamiltonian, and then this state happens to, you know, have some relation with the symmetry, and then you get this sort of thing. So I guess you could say they're fine-tuned. And for instance, you can also see, I'll talk about this later too, that this sort of thing kind of decreases with system size, no? So the area of these peaks is actually suppressed with system size, no? It's also another feature of these things. Okay, so I guess what I'm going to talk about is the following, is that we can show that from this expression, from this sort of thing, we can derive this sort of thing. That's more roughly what I'm going to talk about. Any questions? No? Okay. So let me just start with the assumptions that we need for the results. Basically, the first assumption is that there's a perfect revival at a short time, tau. And in particular, we can take tau to be polynomial in system size. Here is constant, of course. This thing, no? But we can even take it to be polynomial. But I think it's for the sake of clarity, it's better if you just think of this tau as constant for the rest of the talk. And it's perfect. The revival is perfect. We also have results for when this is like 1 minus epsilon. I'll talk about this later. And there's also some constraints on the initial state that I think are fairly reasonable. One of them is that it has very low entanglement, no? In particular, this is how we define it, no? So if you take as a region A, and you look at how mixed this region A is, in particular, we have to bound the rank of the reduced state on region A by this number. So in particular, if, for instance, if you're in 1D and this is like an MPS, this is related to the bond dimension. And for like when this is a product state, this is going to be 1, okay? Also, the state has to be short-range correlated. Of course, these and these are not completely independent, no? But it's an extra constraint that we have. And also, the other thing is that it has standard deviation in energy that scales with the square root of n. And I think all these things are fairly reasonable, no? Basically, when you prepare our initial state in the lab, in a Hamiltonian that is interacting, I think you more or less expect all of these things to hold, no? Basically, these two things tell you that somehow your state is like easy to prepare, no? Because, you know, of course you can prepare product states, no, more easily than eigenstates, no? And this one tells you that there's some like non-trivial dynamics going on, no? So for instance, this rules out the fact of, you know, for instance, you have a Hamiltonian that is non-interacting, and then you can have an initial product state, which is basically, you know, an eigenstate, no? So this tells you this cannot happen, no?
So how do you define correlation in the second
part? Oh, it's exponential decay of correlations. Two-point correlations, yeah. Shall I write it, or I mean, maybe I just write it. Basically, L and some correlation length, and L is the distance between A and B. And yeah, it has to be exponential here. It's very standard definition. Okay. So I think we can start now to say things from these assumptions. Yep.
It seems like the first assumption is very strong.
This one?
Yeah, because in general stable states doesn't have a finite bound dimension, it's just effectively finite.
Oh, effectively. So you mean that this is like approximately
low total entropy, but not necessarily. Finite. It can mean like the spectrum can decay very fast, but not just strictly finite.
So you're talking about this or this?
The first assumption.
This.
Low intensity.
Ah, this. Okay. So I guess with this, what we're trying to say is that, for instance, this state could be product, which is the one from the paper I showed, the experimental paper. No, a product state will obey this assumption. Yeah. And then an MPS will also obey this assumption, where this is like a constant Moivre dimension. It would be a constant, no? So I mean, maybe there's other things here. I don't know what you have in mind.
I mean, if you study this term, those states.
Ah, okay. So you can have like maybe a high rank with like very low Schmidt coefficients or something like that. Yeah, I guess this could happen. I think. I don't know. Maybe you can. If that's the case, maybe you can put epsilons in places. I'm not sure.
Or we try to define some kind of effective rank at
both levels. Yeah, something like this, maybe. I don't know. So I guess this is telling me about the Reni zero entanglement entropy, no? And I mean, I guess if you can do like a epsilonized version of the Reni zero, and this will still work. I'm not sure, but that's all for this with this for now, actually, because this is kind of necessary. I mean, maybe later when we see how this assumption comes into play, maybe there's something else to discuss there. Okay, anyway, so first I'm gonna use this thing, okay? What does this mean? Actually, this is an argument that we found in this paper, and it was sort of starting point for us. So basically, this constraint of perfect revivals is super strong, no? In particular, this thing is equal to this thing, where this Cj are the energy coefficients of the initial state, okay? So basically, the fact that this is equal to 1 at time tau really tells me that these energies have to be equally spaced in a ladder, no? In particular, they take this form, no? Which is tau is the recurrence time, no? So this is quite strong. In particular, there's another thing, which is the fact that the fact that the Hamiltonian is bounded by n, no? And basically, this means that there are at most a number that is proportional to n non-zero coefficients, like this, no? Basically, the distribution of energy of my initial state is going to take this form, no? It's just peaks, no? Peaks equally spaced with this spacing, no? And there's at most n of them, no? So I guess this is quite strong, no? This is really telling me something strong about the energy distribution. But the question is, of course, what is the distribution among these peaks, no? And this is the next thing I want to talk about. So for this, actually, we use a technical result from this paper of Brandau and Kramer, which is this very Yersin theorem, which I think is a really nice result. And basically, this is telling me that if the initial state has short-range correlations, and the variance of energy goes like square root of n. So these are the two assumptions that I stated initially. Then the energy distribution of this state is close to a Gaussian. I don't want to get into too much detail of what this means, but let me say that the error of this approximation goes like this. Okay, so this expression is going to pop up quite a bit. In particular, from this theorem, it's quite easy to prove that the largest of these coefficients is bounded by this. So actually, it decreases with system size. Okay. So basically, what this is telling me is that in this distribution, now I have an upper bound on all the coefficients. No. So what is going on here? So what's going on here is that I have n numbers which add up to one. Each of them is smaller than this. So it must follow that, you know, many of them are at least, you know, big enough. So basically, from this thing and the previous slide, what we can derive is that there are at least square root of n coefficients that are kind of large, no? Is this clear? You know, basically, because none of these can be particularly large, the weight has to be kind of evenly distributed among them. Okay. This is just like a definition we need. This constant is larger than tau. So in particular, if tau is like exponentially large, this c has to be exponentially large. So then this doesn't really tell me anything. Okay. That's one way in which you can see that you need like short time revivals, no? So this is going to be important. And actually, so one thing I want to talk about is this theorem. sorry, this is a really bad slide, but I think I kind of just want to advertise this result, because I think it's like super nice. So it's from his paper. Well, I guess it's stated in his paper. And basically, this result is telling me something about the, so I take, you know, I have my state, this will be the coefficients. So these CJs are these numbers. So basically, this is a statement about the cumulative distribution function of the energy distribution, if that makes sense. And it's telling me that these numbers, the cumulative distribution function of these numbers looks a bit like that of a Gaussian, no? So you can see this is like the cumulative distribution function of a Gaussian. And this is the cumulative, f is the cumulative distribution function of the energy distribution. So they're close. And the error is this. And I guess this seems quite technical at the moment, but I think it's like a really nice result. I think you can probably do a lot of things with it. And not many people have used it. So, you know, I actually would encourage you to have a look at this and see what else can you do with it, no? Because it's nice. So basically, you can think of this as like a central limit theorem, but where the error is bounded, no? So it's like a central limit theorem for finite n, no? The central limit theorem basically tells me that in the limit of n goes to infinity, this is equal to this. But this is like the finite n version of this, no? So this Bayesian theorem is like a very old thing, no? From the 30s or 40s or whatever. It just happens that these guys proved it for like the setting of quantum many value systems. No? If anyone wants to talk about this later, I'll be very happy to. Okay. So I guess now we can go to sort of the main result, I guess. So this is from the previous slide, no? So I said that there's a square root of n coefficients that are bounded in this way, no? So they're like kind of large, no? Okay, so now what's going on here, basically? So notice that these coefficients are basically the dot product between the initial state, which has low entanglement, with the energy eigenstate, no? The low entanglement in this way, no? So this should already tell you basically that the eigenstate cannot have too much entanglement, no? Because a state that has high overlap with a low entangled state cannot have too much entanglement, no? So you can make this precise, actually. This is, I guess, result from this paper of my collaborator, and you can show this quite easily. Basically, this overlap is upper bounded by this thing. You can see that this thing comes into here, no? So this has to be sort of small, and this is the Reni entropy, the Reni entanglement entropy of the region A, okay? So if you rearrange these things, you get what is the main result for us, which is that there are at least square root of n evenly spaced eigenstates where the Reni entropy of entanglement is upper bounded by this. And you can see that this log n is very similar to the one from the actual models that people were deriving, no? And a few comments about this is that basically, of course, this doesn't work for alpha. So this only works for alpha strictly larger than one, no? So for instance, for like the Reni 2 or the Reni 3 or the infinity or whatever, for Reni 1, this doesn't tell you anything. And for lower than this, I mean, this is, yeah, it's nothing basically. And so you can see that there's this thing and then this other correction which comes from the initial assumption, no? So I guess if you have an initial state that has more entanglement, then you're going to pick up another term here, no? In particular, here it has like some sort of area law contribution, no? This may be a product of a proof. I'm not sure. Any questions about this?
Alpha sign, by one
minus alpha, is it flip somehow?
Because alpha is 2, then.
Very good. Yes, I think so.
Is alpha minus 1 or something?
Yeah, this is bad. I think so, yeah. Okay, yeah, oh my god, yeah. It's a very big typo, actually. I think, yeah, I think so. So, yeah, for alpha, I mean, trust me that for alpha equals 2, this is non trivial, yeah. yeah, I think you're right. And, yeah. Okay, so maybe probably this is wrong too, actually. Yeah, it's probably just flipped. Yeah. Okay. It's correct in the paper, so. I hope. okay, so this, I guess this is like, you know, basically this tells me that from very few assumptions we can derive already this log scaling. No, this is non-trivial basically when the region A scales linearly with system size. No, because this is like the system size. No? So for instance, when the region A is like half the system. No? Okay, so just let me briefly talk about the approximate revivals, the approximate case, just for the sake of completeness. So basically now I can have another assumption, which is that my fidelity with initial state actually decays with time, slowly. So you have a revival that is only like 1 minus epsilon. In this case, what we can derive is a bit weaker. Basically, the energy distribution now is only constrained to, instead of having this sort of shape with peaks that are just like, you know, delta function, now the peaks have like a finite width. The width is related to the quality of the revivals, I guess. So yeah, so we can bound it in this way. And then what we can show is that basically there are at least square root of n quasi-eigenstates. Quasi-eigenstates basically means states that have like some superposition of eigenstates in this region. This thing we call delta is a region. So basically they're defined like this. You have like a superposition of like a few eigenstates that are all within this interval in energy. No? And for this states, we can also bound the entropy in the same way. No? So yeah, it's too bad. I mean, maybe, you know, when you have approximate revivals, maybe it's actually true that this bound is true for the eigenstates, but we cannot show it with this method. That's the only issue we have. Okay. Yeah, I guess that's it for this. Okay, so maybe now I can talk about a couple of other results that are related to this. To this thing I was, yeah.
So could you go back to the slide where you talk about exactly where, like from where you conclude the number of, again, yeah, this one. So in this case, you are bound for degeneracy and stuff?
I guess here.
There were several CJs which could have.
Yeah, started. I guess this could be. I mean, I think if you have a sort of constant degeneracy, I think this still works out, no? Because at most what's going to happen is that this you're going to have like 1 over the degeneracy or something.
Also, you will lose the degeneracy, like in
that. I guess we assume this was non-degenerate, which is maybe a fair assumption.
Right.
Actually, I don't know if it is, but. but I mean, I think if your degeneracy is not too large, basically you're gonna get like an extra number here,
right.
And if it's not exponential, you're good.
Okay. But you expect that if it's exponential, then this kind of argument should still work.
Well, I'm not sure actually, because I guess maybe what this bound tells you is that the weight in this degenerate half space is bounded by this, but then
true.
Maybe it could be that it's like evenly distributed, no? So
I see.
So in that case, you know, this would give. Just tell you that each eigenstate has support and like, well, has weight which is exponentially small, no? Which is not what you want.
It's entropy would be very large.
Yeah. So basically, if this number is very small, then the bound on the entropy is volume law.
Yeah.
So it's nothing. Yeah. I mean, I think in most of these models, these eigenstates are, I think they're non-degenerate. I mean, you still have Wigner-Dyson statistics, so that helps. Do you agree with this? Or okay, so let me just say this statement, which is actually completely general, but I think it applies well to this sort of setting. So it's basically about the average. So I have the time average between 0 and t of this fidelity. You know? And basically what we can show is that this number decreases quickly with system size. In particular with this. You can see that this error is related to this variation theorem, no? And this is like another term. But basically what happens is that this number for a t that is constant scales like 1 over the square root of n. No? So in particular, what this is telling me is that, I guess something we kind of already guess, which is that these peaks, let's say the width of these peaks or the area of these peaks actually decreases with system size, no? And I guess decreases in this way, no? So this behavior was sort of expected in a way, no? That the fact that this decreases with n, no? And in particular, actually, what is nice is that if you put this thing into here, you actually get that the left-hand side scales like 1 over square root of n. So this is actually, you know, this bound is saturated by these models, no? But actually, this is a completely general statement, no? Basically, the only assumption here is that this has basically these two things. This has finite correlation length, and the variance scales like this. So maybe in other settings, this is also a useful thing to know. I'm not sure. And yeah, so for this proof, we use the Bayesian and also some argument from this paper, which is about general equilibration of quantum systems. Yeah, any questions about this? Because actually, for this, I'm trying to find like other applications, no? Because this is quite a general statement, no? So yeah, we'll see. And then, so I have another result to show you about these revivals. And it's related to Lee-Robinson bounds. So you can see that another feature of this number is that for a constant time that is kind of short, this is actually exponentially small in n, no? So I guess I want to argue that this is like something you should expect quite naturally, no? And we have a result that tells you about this being the case, no? So now we have to restrict ourselves to product states, initial product states. And then what we can say is that for every positive delta, there's a small t, such there's some number, which I'm not going to define here, but it's a number that is positive, and this is true. So this tells me that for this positive t, this fidelity is exponentially small in system size. Okay. So basically, you know, this starts at 1, and then it goes to 0 very fast, exponentially fast. No? In particular, actually, the true scaling will be like, I mean, this coefficient is related to the like tail, it's related to the error in the Lee-Robinson bounds. But we will expect this to be just one, actually, this whole thing. In particular, why this is the case? Well, if you think of, you know, a short time evolution of any Hamiltonian, really, from Lee-Robinson bounds, you should be able to work out that this is basically like a low-depth circuit, no? Something like this. No? I mean, this is a very sketchy argument, but I think it highlights what's going on here. No? Basically, you can approximate this with this thing. And if this is the case, then you should be able to approximate this fidelity with like basically, you know, two product states, you know, the fidelity between two product states, no? And the product states are like the same on the n sides, no? So basically it's a number that is smaller than one, because this is smaller than one, no, if the states are not the same, and it decays exponentially with system size.
So
it
delta is very, very small. And the overlap would be quite close to one.
Yeah, I guess in that case, this k is going to be, maybe it could be like 1 over n or something. Yeah, this could be. But it has to be, you know, I mean, basically, I think this thing, I think it goes like t squared, maybe. I think it goes more or less like t squared. So you can see that, you know, for a t that is constant, this holds. For a t that is like 1 over square root of n, this is also small, I guess. So, you know, this is an argument in which we use Lee-Robinson bounds, but maybe there's a better argument with which you can actually get the exponent, well, this kind of thing, no? Which is exponential of minus n. Who knows?
So where is the revival here?
There's no revival. This is completely general. What I'm saying is that in any plot like this, I guess this is not related to revivals at all, actually. So what I'm saying, this statement is really only about this thing. It's also. I mean, basically, what this tells me is that this goes down very fast. No?
But how can I see this from the perception dilemma in the result?
In which
sense? How? I mean, why this one is not contract? Well, I mean, why this one is not?
Why you assume contract with this? Yeah. So you can see that that's a tricky bit here. No. So basically, there's going to be a time for which, of course, this is not the case. No. Yeah. You're right. And yeah, because this happens. So basically the trick is this, no? That basically at each point in time in this graph, there's always a time that happened before, for which this is the case. So I think you should think of this as telling you something about very short times.
For every delta, then for each t minus delta.
Yeah. So let me see. So for instance, in this particular thing, you could choose delta to be tau, right? And maybe that's what you're thinking. If you choose delta to be tau, then this shouldn't work. But what I'm saying here is that there exists a t, right?
Okay,
so and the t exists because it's here, right? That's the statement. Yeah.
Okay. So just one t.
At least there's one t, yeah. Yeah. I mean, of course, in general, there's going to be like a whole range, no? But at least one t, yeah. I guess with this, we just wanted to show that you cannot have things like, you know, that do something like this. This cannot happen, no?
Okay.
And that's what you should expect, this kind of functional form, no? Yeah. So I guess actually I'm kind of done, no? Just to summarize a bit, basically, the main result we have is that, you know, we can show that there are square root of n these scarred eigenstates where the entanglement entropy is bounded by this number, no? You know, which seems to be consistent with what people find in the actual models, no? Where they have a logarithmic scaling, no? And I guess this is also wrong, no? Yeah. So one thing I want to highlight here is that because we only talk about I mean, if this was correctly written, we will be talking about the Renyi entropies where this is true, strict inequality. And if you see in the MPS literature, this does not guarantee an efficient MPS description. You know, I kind of thought it could be, but it doesn't. Basically, to guarantee an efficient MPS description, you need this bound, but for this. In particular, actually, I was very surprised to find that the area law in von Neumann entropy also does not imply efficient MPS description, which is not what I hear in many talks.
You said it's actually undetermined, right?
Yeah, it's undetermined. Yeah. So also this leaves it undetermined. Yeah. And I guess what I want to say actually is that you know, it would be nice to show that these eigenstates are actually MPS. No, this, I guess I leave this as an open question. And also, maybe you can also show that instead of square root of n, there's n of them, no? Because this is what you see in the actual models, no? But I guess one thing I want to say is that the present argument of this paper, which is, you know, take the overlap between the energy eigenstates and the initial state and see how much that gives you, this doesn't work to get MPS description. In particular, there's a very simple counterexample from this paper, but it's really simple, in which you can construct a state that has arbitrarily high overlap with a product state, but still has a volume law of entanglement. So basically, this tells me that you can have these CJs to be very large and still have a volume law. In the von Neumann entropy, for instance, of course not in the Renyi 2 entropy, no, but in the von Neumann entropy you can have. So you know, I mean, I think it's a nice open question to find different arguments, no, for which you can show that there's an efficient MPS description, and you know, maybe I have some vague ideas, but I'm not sure. Maybe something to do with like, maybe you can use the proofs of the area laws that are in the literature, I'm not sure. And you know, of course I didn't go too much into the current state of SCARS, but I think it's kind of quite an interesting field, it's very active now. So I think there's quite a few open questions in this. I guess two I want to mention is the stability of these states to perturbations. This has been studied by Jacob here. And also for instance, the relation to like other kinds of deviation from ETH, in particular to integrability, for instance. Some people seem to think that when you have SCARS, it's because you have some sort of, you know, your Hamiltonian has some sort of relation to like a parent Hamiltonian that is integrable or something like this. This is what they say in this paper, which seems, I guess, an interesting idea. And, you know, there's many more open questions, actually, about this. People are trying to understand this, no? And, you know, I think it's, you know, this is a nice thing to work on nowadays. And yeah, I guess with this, I conclude. So thanks a lot.
So I was wondering if you thought about like in the Fonte setting.
Yeah.
Say you have like a time crystal period doubling.
Mm.
Can you place constraints on the eigenstates based on the fact that there's period doubling?
Yeah. I have not thought of this at all. Okay. I mean, I know people for sure have been finding like these cache states in some Flokke systems. There's like a few papers about this, and I'm not sure. I will guess they also have something like this. So maybe the picture is similar there, but I don't know how these ideas will map to this setting actually. Because for instance, the this very async theorem, I'm not sure you will be able to apply in that setting. So yeah, I guess my answer is I don't know, but it's worth checking. And there should be some papers in the literature hinting where this goes already. Yeah, actually, I guess also the relation between the Flokke, these time crystals and these things, I'm not completely sure what the relation is, but I guess there might be something.
For those time crystal systems, they actually have disorders.
Right.
And
all right.
Yeah, I mean, they probably wouldn't be really trying to bound the entanglement, but maybe using some cat-like character instance.
But I thought that those are basically some kind of MBO already. Isn't that?
Oh, isn't. Yeah.
Is that true? Sorry. Yeah, I guess.
You're saying that they have to be like localized. Awesome.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I guess in that case, the whole spectrum is localized.
Yeah.
Or area local.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the theory doubling should place some additional constraint on the
grid.
Uh-huh. Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, because you also have like a finite, well, like a fixed period, no? Where this, right.
Okay, well, let's like cover